Welcome everyone turning up to this session on Australian equities market and the sort of industry structure and cycles that are in it. The presenter today is Izma Tuzovic. Izma is an equity research analyst at JP Morgan covering diversified financial companies. Prior to joining JP Morgan, Izma worked as a consultant in the wealth management and insurance industry, specialising in company valuations, mergers and acquisitions, and capital management. During this time, Izma worked with companies across Asia Pacific and Europe. Izma is a fellow of the Institute of Actuaries of Australia and a graduate of the University of New South Wales. So, over to you, Izma.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Thanks, everyone, for showing up. What I wanted to go through in this presentation is look at the sort of the Australian equity market, where it sits today, what the valuation is, what that valuation implies, whether we can say that the market is overvalued or undervalued, and then sort of build a framework around that, and then focus a bit more on the financial services firms, so banks, wealth managers, investment managers, and exchanges, and sort of give you some of my thoughts of what's going on in those industries, and specific. Well, I won't be talking about specific companies, but I'll keep it at a sector level. So the first thing here is I've got the forward sort of PE ratio of the Aussie All Ordinaries Index, and so what's that doing? It's taking the valuation of the Australian equity market and comparing it to 1 year forward analysts' earnings estimates. And as you can see, we're sort of at around 11 times of 1 year forward earnings, which is kind of sitting at a 20% below sort of the 10-year average, and probably a bit more around 40% below the average that we had the pre-GFC. So I guess the thing from this, to say, well, what does that imply? Does that imply that the market is undervalued, or is there something on? Is there something more going on here? Obviously, there's something more going on, because otherwise the presentation would finish at the next slide. So what I think we need to have a look at is, obviously three things impact valuation. So you've got the kind of the global / economic kind of the macro situation. So the particular circumstances that we have now is impacting valuation, but then you also got to look at it at an industry level, and you've got to say, well, how is that impacting different industries? At then looking at these industries, at what point of the sort of the cycle are they in, and what point of the sort of economic cycle are the particular industries? And then the third thing is industry structure and sustainability sort of going forward, because we're doing a sort of a relative historic valuation. So the first thing that I focus on is global macro. I think it's obviously impacting everything, sort of following from Chris's presentation this morning, but it's impacting different sectors to different extent. And two sectors that I've singled out as being sort of impacted to a large extent are mining and, to some extent, banking industry. So miners, obviously leveraged to sort of a global growth story and the potential to global or China hard landing, which is at the moment, just based on sort of fundamental valuation, the share price of mining companies kind of 40% below what their 5-year PE averages is. Now, if you look at that and kind of say, well, okay, commodity prices are at historic highs, why is the valuation sort of below? And what I subscribe this to is basically kind of the global risk associated, with the potential sort of slowing down in China and the hard landing. And the other sector that I think is impacted is the banking sector. Now, look at valuation, 20% below 5-year average PE, it's not a massive sort of, undervaluation as mining is. But obviously, the sort of things in Europe are impacting banking valuations here. It's probably not a linear relationship as, you know, commodity prices to mining are. So what you kind of see is you've got tightening sort of credit markets in Europe. You get some sort of margin pressure. But in case of closure of credit markets, you've got potentially banks running out of business. Basically disappearing. So whether that happens or not, you know, central banks step in is a different thing. So these two sectors I kind of put in into, to some extent, global sort of macro put writers, in a sense that you've written a put option on the global economy. If nothing goes wrong, you will get paid over time, but that's the kind of the risk that you're taking. But then if we sort of look at the second thing that I said we need to look at, and that's the sort of the cyclical points on different industries. And the nice thing about this kind of thing is, if your industry is sitting in a cyclical downturn, it sort of gives you a value opportunity. And there's because there's kind of mean reversion. As soon as the cycle starts to pick up, returns will come back. And so this has the potential to affect valuation now. But having looked at sort of through the Australian sort of index, and there's not that many sectors that actually are operating at cyclical sort of lows. There are, sectors, economy's been sort of fairly flat. It hasn't sort of, dived off a cliff. So, there's probably, when I went through it, I could only sort of single out one or two sectors, the obvious one being sort of building and materials sector. So that sector's, very leveraged to sort of building activity, both here and to some extent in the US. So, to the extent that has slowed post the GFC, the industry is operating at a what you say is a cyclical low, but there's nothing fundamentally wrong with the industry. The returns are still there once the kind of the activity comes back. So, yes, some industries are operating a cyclical downturn, but not that many. And in this case, valuation is pretty easy because all you have to do is kind of time the, guesstimate, make an estimate of when the recovery is going to occur. What I think is the more sort of fundamental issue affecting many sectors of the sort of Australian equity market is kind of the structural change that's going on within those sectors, and the rebasing of the returns. So in this case, you don't have the kind of the classical sort of mean reversion. You basically don't know where your returns are heading. In this case, they're heading downwards. So that makes it very difficult to value these companies, because it's in our nature to sort of put some sort of means, and very difficult to kind of say, well, how low can things be? And the things that are driving sort of the rebasing in returns across many sectors is competition, technology, and regulation. And competition and technology, in my mind, sort of come hand in hand, because really, technology is kind of introducing a new paradigm for competition, and what it's allowing is the entrance of not necessarily your traditional sort of competitors. So take a look at Coles and Woolworths. Yeah, it's a competitive industry structure, but all it really does is cap returns. It doesn't, none of those companies face sort of existential threats, or their returns are sort of going to stay pretty stable. What I'm talking about here is companies that, because of technology, and I think mainly technology, are operating on a different sort of cost structure and different distribution methods, which sort of then allows them to set different pricing points. And I can go through sort of various examples that I've listed here. So, for example, in the airline industry, obviously someone like a Tiger or AirAsia X is a disruptor to Qantas, in the sense that, Qantas would have never priced at those levels had these guys not entered. You're seeing the same kind of thing in online retailing versus kind of the brick and mortar. retailers. So, you know, again, following on from the, I think it was the presentation earlier on today, you know, and showing the sort of the rise in the retail. And, you know, I mean, I argue here that, you know, once online retail, I mean, sort of establish itself, it's very hard for brick and mortar to change that pattern, because once you've sort of, you know, built some customer behaviour habits, those will stay. So, you know, even if we get some, you know, top line growth and, you know, global recovery, you know, that sort of entrance of online retail is completely rebased sort of the returns that these companies can generate. Similar thing that we've seen in sort of print and media compared to the sort of the new digital. So I think a lot of sectors in the economy, at least on the Australian equity market, are going through this process, and it's very hard to put a valuation, and it's very hard for investors to decide what they want to actually pay for these returns that may not be there in a few years, and it happens very quickly. So, then the final thing is just regulation and government policy. I've just listed a few sort of examples there. I think the telco sector, obviously NBN, and the government having an impact there. Wealth management is another sector that's being massively impacted, in my mind, by sort of regulation and government policy that's rebasing sort of the returns that we're likely to get. Investment banking, that's more a global kind of issue, but you're definitely seeing sort of things, regulators are capping returns, and I think analysts are forecasting, you know, ROEs below 10% for investment banking for next 5 years, so pretty dire. I think healthcare is the one that we're probably going to see a lot more intervention in future, given the importance of this sector to the new sort of to the aging sort of population. So I think that gives us a kind of a structure to work with, which is the three things impacting valuations, which is the global macro, the industry sort of cyclical issues, and structural issues. And now I just want to sort of take those a bit further and apply them to the financial services sector. And so I said I'll cover banks, investment managers, exchanges, and wealth managers. So just to start off with banks, I've already covered it a bit, but look, post-GFC, in my mind, banks have emerged with a pretty favourable industry structure. So they have very high margins, but the issue is they have low growth as a result of the sort of the credit boom pre the GFC. So, you know, looking on from here, further margin expansion is difficult. You know, we saw some presentation earlier today saying, well, there's a potential, you know, digital option, and given the high margin, this is an attractive market for global banks. But what will probably counteract that is the kind of the capital pressures that most of the banks are feeling globally, and so, you know, coupled with their sort of bruised balance sheets, is you're actually seeing global competitors scaling back from the Australian market, at least in the shorter term. So I've talked about the sort of the put option, you know, valuation of banks. I mean, at the moment they giving you pretty good dividend yields of around sort of 8% net. So I mean, you can make a pretty good return if things don't go pear-shaped. So in that case, I mean, you could argue that the banks are sort of at a cyclical point or a cyclical downturn. They've got good margins, so what it sort of leaves them with, whether they return that capital to investors, which most investors would be, you know, usually very happy about, or whether they try to invest in new growth and where that growth is going to come from. Just to give you a look, sort of what happens in the UK tobacco industry, which was kind of X growth in, you know, sort of 15 years ago, but had fabulous margins, and because it didn't need sort of new investments, it had very good cash flow returns. So, you know, I mean, it was a pretty good sort of investment 10 years ago compared to the UK, you know, broader market. But, you know, whether this is true for banks will still remain to see that, because usually management aren't good at accepting, you know, a lack of growth, and they try to usually find new areas to grow into and then subsequently destroy value, because they're not usually good at picking winners. So, I mean, if I was to summarise the banking sector, high margins, X growth, but very little threat to those margins going forward. And so it really comes down to what management decides to do with that extra, you know, extra cash flow going forward. Will kind of determine their fate. Now, the second sector I want to cover is investment managers. So the Australian sort of investment management landscape is predominantly active Aussie equity managers, and what you're seeing there is kind of increased competition and focus on costs and different strategies. So that active equity management is kind of going through, I'd say, a structural change as well. So what you're seeing is competition from boutique managers, where you're getting kind of 5 or 10 guys sitting in a small office without all the back office support, pretty much running $5, $10, $15 billion funds purely on intellectual capital. So having much sort of lower cost structure to some of the more established players who have tended to have a lot of legacy funds, a lot of administration issues with those, and so you know, the legacy managers have also charged more, and you're getting the boutiques who are competing for funds much more aggressively, especially at a sort of institutional level. The other issue that's sort of affecting active equity management is the performance cycle. So active managers usually sort of perform in cycles, and they're currently going through an underperformance cycle. So that's seeing a lot of the money move away from active management into sort of passive and lower cost strategies. As bigger investors, so superannuation funds, consolidate, they're realizing the benefits of the scale that they bring, and the scale that sort of gives them lower investment cost and wider choice from which they're, you know, from those two things, they're trying to get their excess returns, as opposed to trying to achieve that through active management. You're also seeing the rise of direct equity ownership, especially in sort of SMSF structures, you know, which then completely bypasses the whole value chain. And you're seeing an asset allocation change, some of it structural, some of it cyclical. The structural to do with sort of demographic change and probably a bit more understanding about the risks within especially the retail community, retail investors. But you're seeing some sort of, you're also seeing cyclical issues, basically because of the kind of perceived risks and volatility in the equity markets. You're seeing a lot of people put their money in cash and sort of lower volatility options. So obviously, you know, my conclusion here, both structural and cyclical sort of issues for active investment management, and the structural being the kind of the predominant force there. Third sector that I want to cover is exchanges. And exchanges have, to some extent, gone through a lot of changes that some of the industries are going through now. So technology, competition, and regulation. Regulation is kind of the main thing now, with technology and competition probably already played out globally. I mean, we've seen competition enter the Australian market. But, I mean, the main thing there is the actual sort of the advance of the technology and the establishment of electronic trading platforms, and also then electronic sort of trading strategies and execution that come with that. How has technology changed the landscape there? Electronic trading platforms, all they do is they basically match buyers and sellers. They don't actually do any of the settlement or any of the clearing. So it's a pretty low cost kind of structure to set up and operate, which means that they've got a different sort of pricing point that they can set. But that's not enough. They need to actually attract liquidity to their platforms, because without liquidity, you're pretty much irrelevant. Doesn't matter how low your pricing. So they not only do they lower prices, they adopt different pricing models that attempt to get liquidity. And so what you have is kind of things like, for example, in Canada, where Chi-X gained around 30% of market share within 2 years, just based on their pricing model. Overall, the actual revenue from trading for exchanges has subsequently gone to zero. So no major exchange anymore, unless it operates in a very secluded market, has actually gets much revenue from trading. Competition now is all about liquidity, because once you have liquidity, then you have the opportunity to add value through different functions, so clearing, settlement, and capital raisings. They've also opened up sort of new revenue sources now that the revenue's gone, to zero sort of sum game, which is selling back the market data, so the trading data, selling it back to participants, and also charging for different connections to exchanges, which give you different speeds, different width of access. So overall, what this has meant is you've gone from a kind of an industry or a company that's a sort of pretty high beta sort of trading market driven to something that's looking extremely more like a sort of a utility provider with low beta type returns. So it hasn't all been negative. New sort of revenue sources have emerged, but what you're also seeing with this advances in electronic trading is increased complexity and sort of IT costs associated with this, and you're seeing a lot of the participants moving away from lit markets into other structures which facilitate trading without having to have complex IT, complex and costly IT. The last thing on exchanges is that the post-GFC regulation has come out very favourably of centralised exchanges. So what you are seeing is a global sort of preference for centralised trading and clearing. You've got a G20 commitment to clear OTC derivatives by the end of 2012. So Australia has signed up for that as well. At the moment, it's most likely to only apply to interest rate swaps, which is the predominant market here. In addition to that, you're seeing a lot of regulators focusing on increasing or putting regulation that was probably missing to some extent, and this is preventing some of the global consolidation that we might have seen, in the lead up to the GFC, both in sort of trading and clearing and settlement. And the reason for that is, basically regulators wanting local regulators wanting more control over their what they call critical market infrastructure. And they're also coming out and limiting, alternative trading platforms like dark pools, expressing preference for lit markets, so centralised markets that everyone can access to. The reason to point that out, because that's actually in contrast to any other financial services where regulation is adversely impacting most companies operating in financial services. Wealth management, my personal opinion is, increased competition from both industry and SMS funds is clearly driving down returns, and and the sort of the fat margin kind of structure that a lot of the retail players have relied on historically coming down. Government is having a lot of impact on that. There's a tax thing. You could argue, taxation of superannuation is probably more of a cyclical rather than a structural thing. And if we saw another Liberal government coming, you might get a bit more of the tax, favourable tax treatment of superannuation, especially contributions. Simplified products and advice, which are also driving prices down. So, yes, there is growth, but overall, there's clearly winners and losers in the industry. And I think, especially the established players having their returns sort of rebased in the longer term. So is the market cheap? Yes, look, there's probably some, global issues overhanging the market, but at the same time, many sort of industries have structural issues. Within the financial services, identified sort of wealth managers and investment managers having the biggest problems. Exchanges, yes, but they've mainly gone through that process, and regulation is actually coming out favourable. And banking, which is probably more of a cyclical issue there. And the question is, how will the excess capital be utilised? So that's the summary of the presentation. And there's some suggested points of our discussion going forward. Definitely like to hear your views. Where you think what your area of specialty is, retail wealth management, whatever it may be, and how you see things working out for them going forward.
Okay, thank you, Ismail. Any questions or comments? Please use a microphone and state your name. Come with one to get a ball rolling. In the funds management wealth management area, given sort of scale is basically such a large determinant of how profitable your business is going to be, do you see further consolidation through like mergers or takeovers?
From my mind is that it's going to be pretty difficult ACCC to approve a lot more sort of consolidation, at least in the retail world space. Industry funds here probably still have a bit more to consolidate. But everyone has a different view. I think we've seen a lot of consolidation happen already. So, a few presentations today kind of said, well, yeah, FOFA, we're getting, consolidation. Well, the industry's already consolidated, right? I think we're already there.
Dan Antioch from Towers Watson. At the start of the pack and towards the end, you mentioned that you thought the market might be cheap. And you actually showed a slide of forward P multiples. Do you actually think a recovery is more likely than not? Or do you think there's more downside to play out, particularly with our leverage towards the China market and so on?
I think, the market isn't cheap. There's obviously global sort of issues weighing down, but I think what I'm trying to say is a lot of industries are sort of facing what you call these structural issues. And, even if you've got some global growth and, economy picked up, that's not the major sort of driver of, market value. Sort of main drivers are returns that you can sort of generate longer term. And I see those coming down. So that's where I see the sort of de-re-rating. Some of the issues cleared up, obviously, you'd see a bit more confidence in equity markets. So that will... be a positive, but I think looking at an individual company and industry level, a lot of companies are facing sort of bigger structural issues, rather than being sort of driven by global macro, which is more kind of like your miners and which sort of heavily depend on this. And I think that probably links with what the RBA person, was his name, this morning was saying, and you know, he sort of showed how we've kind of gone along without being impacted too much by global global recessions and so forth. So I think that's the kind of the counterfactual.
Tom Cherin, Merrill Lynch. As a competitor, I'll try and keep off any sensitive areas, but just interested, you made that comment around Chi-X and they gained around 30% in 2 years. Personally, don't look at exchanges, but I would be interested in your views on what impact, because they've all obviously started their operations here, what impact you'd expect in the Australian market?
Yeah, so, I mean, what you saw globally is when alternative sort of electronic trading platforms set up is they were able to implement this, what's called a maker-taker pricing model. So, I mean, anytime when you have a trade, you know, someone has already posted whether it's a bid or an ask, and another person hits that. So the pricing model that a lot of the overseas sort of like Chi-X, for example, adopted was, well, if you're posting liquidity, we will actually pay you a rebate. But if you're hitting that liquidity, so if you're a taker of liquidity, you will have to pay a fee. Now, the net impact for them is they actually don't make any money out of this. But it has meant that liquidity suddenly, there was a lot of market makers. So, for example, your high-frequency trading firms who just posted liquidity, and as other investors saw that liquidity, they jumped onto those alternative trading platforms because they could get some price improvement. And so once you have a bit more liquidity, then you get more. And so that made it very easy for them. The difference in the Australian market is that ASIC has forbidden the maker-taker pricing model. So whilst they have adopted a similar model, they're not allowed to sort of pay rebates back. So they have a different they charge you a different fee whether you're posting liquidity or whether you're taking it, but they're still charging you a fee as opposed to paying you to post for liquidity. So that's a major difference, and probably one of the reasons why Chi-X hasn't. So it's been operating for about 6 months. It's has about 2% market share. So I mean, over time it will sort of increase naturally, but that sort of limits the kind of the exponential sort of growth that you saw in, you know, say for example in Canada. And the other thing is that you know, I mean, the existing exchange here has had time to sort of prepare for competition, whereas overseas it was much more of a, you know, it took them sort of a couple of years to wake up and realise that there's competition actually there. But thanks for the question.
Related to that, you mentioned dark pools,
right,
in your presentation. I'd never heard of them before your presentation. So could you...
If you follow the Fin Review, you can... They've had a few cartoons of Elmi Funke Cooper, who's the new ASX CEO, who's you know, sort of with goggles and dark pool of water, because he's been talking about them. But basically, what dark pools are, they're set up and they appeal to buy side firms, so to fund managers, and they allow fund managers to trade between themselves by bypassing brokers. And they can post their orders in sort of block sizes in there. So if you wanted to trade a million of Telstra shares, you have to post that as a block in there. You don't know who else sits in that pool. And you know, the idea is if someone else posts it and you know your price is matched, then you have a trade. But what it does let you do is if you wanted to do the same trade on the ASX, what you'd have to do is you have to either use a broker who charge you a pretty high fee, or you have to have pretty sophisticated systems that sort of allowed you to break that order down? Because, I mean, as soon as you posted, you know, a million, you know, buy or sell onto the ASX, which is a lit market, you'd lose the sort of, the price would drop or increase depending on which side of the trade you were. So because of that sort of increased complexity in execution and the additional sort of IT costs, this is coming up with new structures so that brokers can bypass exchanges and trade between themselves.
Individual
companies. So Liquidnet is just a privately operated company, and obviously it just sees a niche in there. And the main point there is sort of the integrity and no one being able to look at, because as soon as you post an order through a broker, that broker knows what you're trying to do. So even though the broker may say he's acting in your best interest, you never know that he is. So these are meant to be sort of completely... and they're operated by third-party sort of independent companies, yeah. And, I mean, the issue there for exchanges is you know, if dark pools grow, then liquidity moves away from lit exchanges and moves onto dark pools, and exchanges become less and less relevant because, you know, it's kind of like your newspaper publishing. I mean, if you haven't got circulation, your product's dead. So liquidity is kind of the same thing for exchanges, not because of the revenue they get from it, but from the additional services, because once you've got liquidity, then you can have capital formation, you can have, you know, clearing and settlement, which are all sort of sources of revenue.
Okay, please join me in thanking Ismar for his presentation, and if you could fill out your evaluation forms, either the paper versions or on the web app, yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Paul.